Hey everyone, welcome to the Agency Classified Actor Files. In these interviews, we'll be interviewing some of our cast members. I'm here with our wonderful narrator, the one and the only Christopher T. Wood. Hey, Chris.
Hey, finally I can speak. Woohoo!
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I get to talk to you, so I'm having a good day.
There we go.
All right. So why don't we just jump on in? So you have a very interesting story of how you came to acting, and without, you know, telling the whole thing, because, you know, it's a long story, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to acting, all of that journey, all of that.
Well, I had a fortunate situation. Both my mom and my sister realized I was highly dissatisfied in the job that I was doing. I was a corporate lawyer for Sony, and I had worked on Wall Street for 5-6 years. And they called me up and told me to quit, go into acting, and because they knew I always wanted to. And I told them they were fools until I hung up the phone. And then as soon as I hung up the phone, I was like, that's it. Quit the next day. I don't know why. I never thought about it before as a realistic thing, because all the actors I met were not working. So didn't seem very logical to give up a job that I had. So it never occurred to me to do it. And then after I did it, it never occurred to me to stop. And I've loved it. It's 20 years now. Wow. Maybe 22 years, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, and I'll tell you a quick funny story about it. I was going to put my law license in abeyance, which is just sort of on the side. So I called up the New York bar and I said, hey, I'd like to, put my license in abeyance, yada, yada. And I got this guy and the other. He's like, oh, sure. What are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to be an actor. He's like, oh, great. Excuse my New York accent, but that he had a thick one. So weeks later, I get a letter and it says, you are hereby, and it's in bold print, retired from the practice of law. Yes, I was like, so I immediately got on the phone, called up the New York bar that moment, and I got the same guy. And I was like, hey, I just got this letter. I asked to be put in abeyance and you have retired me from the practice. He's like, oh, yeah, hold on. Let me go check this out. So he goes back, gets the records, comes back, says, is this Christopher T. Wood? I said, yeah. Didn't you say you wanted to be an actor? I was like, yeah. So be an actor. Click. That was it. New York bar retired me from the practice of law. There is a clerk somewhere that put the final stamp on my career. Literally wouldn't answer the phone after that.
That is such an incredible story. You don't hear that.
That is a New York moment.
That is a new. I have not even had a New York moment like that. And, oh, wow. That is.
Didn't awesome. You say you wanted to be an actor? So be an actor. Click.
It's cool to hear that because you don't hear stories like that. You hear a lot of people that when they say, oh, I want to be an actor, it's like, it's the joke. Oh, you're going to be a waiter. Or you're going to be this or that. Mm-hmm. It's never someone's like, oh no, you want to be an actor? Go be an actor. Click. That's yep. Kind of cool.
I think it is. And what I always felt best about it, I always say being an actor is like being a black person in the 70s. You're the lowest. And that's when I was a young kid. It's so acknowledged that you're a low person on the totem pole. You're at the back of the class. That's the honor, that willingness to, walk into a party and say, hey, what are you doing? I was 35. What are you doing? I'm an actor. What have you been in? Nothing. Their eyes look at you like, oh, you are just pathetic. And if that doesn't give you a sense of dedication and honor. Look, I'm doing something that most people can't do. That in and of itself, not the achievement. The achievement's easy. The failure is where the effort takes. And that's so, and I loved it. I love those looks. I loved when people, just looked at you. It reminded me of the 70s of like, you're going to go to college. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. Get out of town. Well, work then and work now. So,
wow, that is. Honestly, Chris, I mean, I've admired you since we did our first production together, but that is some powerful stuff.
So you didn't know that your decision to become an actor makes you just like a black man in the 70s. You didn't know that.
I wasn't even I wasn't even talking about that. I was just talking about, you know, you're saying taking the joy in the looks and the failure and everything, because so much of it, so much of this industry is us taking that and just saying, feeling the honor of getting to do that and know that I'm dedicated to something. And I wish more people spoke like that, because it's so hard. And no, you know,
I think it's true. I mean, it's the hardest job. You hear actors will quit to be directors, quit to be writers, quit to be producers. You never hear, or rarely, sure, it's out there, someone say, oh, God, directing was a nightmare. I'm just going to go back into acting. You don't hear that. And there is honor in our difficulty. There is honor in sitting in that hall time after time after time. And I find the guys that I've come through with, everybody gets it. They're not demeaned by it, you know?
Yeah.
We're just there. There's a purpose. And interestingly, being on shows, I'm squarely a middle-class actor. No question. Like, I am the essence of that. When you pop onto a big show, and there's always, by definition, a big actor, I always feel they get it. They're like, oh, you made it through that rat's nest to get here. Okay, let's go. You know, that's what it always seems like to me. That has been my experience on almost every show I've had. There's not that, oh, you're still at that. No, it's like, yeah, you made it. Congratulations. I remember doing a show with Jim Belushi. He had a show, According to Jim, and it was my either first or second gig that I ever got. And when he walked on set, there were first, it's a sitcom, so it's rare that you have guest cast. There were about eight of us. And he just looked out, saw us, and started applauding. He was like, actors getting paid. I love it. I love it. And I was like, okay, there's something here. It is a phenomenal job. It is a phenomenal job. The only job I've had that's better is being a lifeguard. That is a really good job.
Oh, wow. Okay. I've never been a lifeguard. I don't think I'd be good at it. So I'm going to take your word for it. All right, we could talk about acting and your philosophy, because it's really wonderful. We have to do a whole other interview with that about
a whole separate thing.
So this season you were the narrator. You will continue being the narrator.
always good to know you still have a job.
Yeah, Chris is not going anywhere. Anybody? So what did you enjoy about the narrator, about playing him this season?
There's no restriction, or I don't want to say direction, but there's no mandate on this character. If you're playing Texas Cowboy, there's a bit of a mandate. You're not going to do that in an Irish accent. You're not going to bring up an Irish accent. The narrator really exists. It's just whatever pops into your head as right is right. It's by definition. That's the way the narrator does things. So that kind of freedom, you're not going to get that opportunity working. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there are not many roles that are going to come along. They say, you know, anything you want to do, even a celebrity who gets put in some role and they say, just go crazy. They probably want that celebrity's shtick. They don't, you know, they're like, there's a reason we paid.
There's a reason we hired you. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So this role, you literally got to find it as the words came to you, you know? And a lot of the language is just absurd. So therefore, you're like, oh, he really doesn't have any limits. He's the closest thing to Althea that you're just, there's nothing. I mean, the nature of the piece is that there's nothing that can't be done. But certainly, if there were any guardrails, those guardrails are removed for the narrator.
I would say that's very true, because the narrator, like, you know, he exists in that void, and, you know, and you, because I mean,
where's the void? We don't even know where the void is.
Yeah, I know. It was so funny when we did like your mini episode, and I said, you're channeling Patrick Stewart right now, because we were doing an homage to like Star Trek. And all of a sudden, yeah. I was like, this is interesting. Chris is going places.
There you go. Why not? Why not?
Did you feel like over the course of season one, I mean, because the narrator, we talked a bit about in the beginning when we did our first rehearsal for the first episode, but it'd be interesting to say, what did you feel kind of changed for him over the course of season one?
I mean, I sort of let it flow. I think the character seems a little ridiculous to be describing the character in such weighty terms, but he's sort of like that comic book character that I was drawn to, the Watcher. You realize he gets to see all. And I think the Watcher hung out in the moon, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah, I think
he hung out in the moon and true to his namesake, watched. And only occasionally stepped in. So therefore, as you go through each episode, all the things that the people are doing, you're never tuned out. You're monitoring all that. And I think that aspect, sometimes if someone hires you as a narrator to read a script or what have you, you're on for when you're on, and then you're gone. You don't need to be changed by what happens in the scene or even care about it. Whereas this guy does. He's monitoring. So that's what I would say.
That's cool. Because then, I mean, it's almost like if this were being played out on stage, you almost have to always be looking.
You'd be there.
And being affected at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a play where I played a character like that. Pierre Corneille's The Illusion. So it was redone by Tony Kushner. And the character I played sat on the sidelines and watched all the scenes and commented on them. So in that sense, so you're channeling a little Pierre Corneille, I think.
We talked about this way back in our first rehearsal, because the first episode didn't have as many opinions for the narrator. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, feel free to figure out what's an opinion in that script. And then I said, and he's going to get more opinionated as the season goes. Did you feel that maybe the narrator was getting more freedom as he was getting more and more opinionated because he saw these people?
There was never a point where I felt any absence of freedom. I think you could listen to the first episode and say everything's wacky, but then they all take a focus. So if they just kept saying crazy things, that's one whole different performance.
Right.
As things started to matter to people, in spite of all the strange circumstances, then you're naturally drawn in a little bit. It's not that, sort of prototypical improv exercise where you're just, let's see where our vocabulary can take us type of thing. There is a purpose. So that keeps you locked in. And again, it's the narrator is commenting on you. You're in there. You're in that scene. You're not just saying, and now we're sitting here and now we're doing this. It's like, no, I think this about it.
Even though the narrator can only talk to Althea right now because she's the only one that hears him. Do you feel the narrator, because we haven't explored this in a script yet, but I think it might be fun to do. Do you think the narrator feels a part of the group, even though only one person can hear him?
Yes. I get the sense he's been here before. So therefore, he has a little, it's another crop of interesting, shall we see. I mean, Althea can hear him now, but who's to say what he may be able to do?
Right. Cool. All right. So did you have a favorite episode that we recorded this season, or was there a favorite moment, even if in one particular episode? Like, were there anything that stood out to you that you really enjoyed? Or
I think sometime toward the middle when he had to roll through that long language where you're just, the art is just don't stop. Not simply just stop, but don't stop caring about what you're doing. Just power through and see what happens. So you really can't plan it out. And therefore, what you're getting toward the end of, particularly in the center where we're finding where he is, I'm learning that as fast as people are hearing it. I do not know what's about to happen or why or wherefore, where his accents will be. It's merely, just sort of taking a trip through the prose type of thing, which seems strange. And I mean, I think our piece could be described as slapstick, but
I think that's
still
a pretty good observation.
But even still, it's a role. I did Waiting for Godot. I played the character that had that long absurdist monologue. It's a great monologue. It makes no sense. It's really fun to do because since it makes no sense, any sense you give it is what is. So you're almost like a second writer.
Like you said earlier, there's that sense of freedom as the actor that you kind of get to create it as you go. we don't get that as often because, you know, we're so boxed in depending on the script or even the setting and all that stuff or the time period. You know, there's certain ways of doing things because we're trying to be truthful to what we're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Okay. So this was your first podcast, correct? Agency Classified was your
yes.
first podcast.
Yeah.
So how did you find the podcasting experience? Because you had never done one like this before.
I liked it. I mean, my experience with podcasts is never fictional. So all the podcasts that I listen to are, you know, news oriented or something like that, or music in that sense. So the idea of trying to hold someone when they can't see anything, it's hard. But actually, and this doesn't exist in LA anymore, I think. When I first got to LA, I forgot to turn on the power for my apartment. So the first, so it had been shut off. There was a red tag, and I had an appointment a week later. It was August, so the light stayed out. But after that, the place was dark. And on one of the news channels, I think it was 1070, they played the old radio shows. And that's what I listened to. I had a battery-operated radio, and they played Paladin and stuff like that. So the good thing about this situation for a listener, unlike television, even unlike YouTube, or things that you might see on your computer, you can walk around and experience it. So you're not locked to one place. You can do two things at once. You're not even locked to where you listen to it. So being a part of something like that was pretty good. And I'm not, you know, worried about, oh, get all the information right, because this is a factual show that talks about the news or something. Mm-hmm.
Did you think, especially because we started to record this during, almost all of us were still in quarantine when we started to record this. So the fact that you could listen to it anywhere, because one of the only things people could go and do was really go out and a walk.
Yeah.
Did you find that to be, as knowing that we were going to be producing something people could use, did you find that comforting? Did you think that was a good thing to be doing for people?
I did. I didn't think about it that hard. I didn't think about who would listen to it, because that's when you start getting a little squirrely. I remember doing a commercial, and there was one of the women there was, you know, she's always called in for the hot woman for the beer commercial. And we're doing a fitting, and she has to do bikinis. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how do you do that? Because you're walking into a room of, you know, people sitting on a couch telling your hot self that you're not hot enough or that bikini doesn't look right. And she's like, I just don't see him. I'm like, which bikini or this one? And then, you know, so I'm not thinking about that. I think once you start thinking about that, that's a lot to have on your brain, mm-hmm. particularly while you're trying to make it through the language that you guys give us, because it's not as if it's absolutely intuitive. It's going 1,000 different places. So
as like almost like a very healthy detachment. So you're just like, I'm here to do my work.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of the work I'm doing, but keep
wow, it's also a blast. I mean, it's so I've done this long enough to know that I won't get a chance to do this again. Like, this isn't going to come up. There's not going to be a movie or a television show where we do this. Never going to happen. So if you don't enjoy it now, you're not going to get it. So that, you know, it's very easy to sit back and enjoy. It's like a pop-up restaurant type of thing.
Oh, you know what it is? That's good. We should use that.
Podcast.
We are the pop. We're creating something new. We're the pop-up podcast. That's
exactly. Exactly. Okay. I mean, you really, you could do a search. I don't think you'd find something similar.
No, not that we've seen, there's been other fiction podcasts out there, but I will say that, you know, ours, like you said, ours is pretty unique in its absurdity and the pace of it and the use of language. I mean, we have something fun coming up for you in the first episode of season 2, which you haven't read yet. And
something fun, unlike the boring stuff that I've had. So, you know, I can't imagine what it is.
Well, because it's funny. It was definitely a discussion Claire and I had, because we're like, oh, we want to make sure we give Chris something interesting to do. So it was like, okay, so this is what the narrator's journey is going to be for season 2, because the agents being corporeal and physical, they have more interaction with each other. Mm-hmm. And so for the narrator, it's definitely as a thought, as creators, we want to make sure that we're like, oh, since he can't physically interact with these people, he needs to be going on his own journey in his own world, that really the only person that will ever connect to him with that is Althea. So yeah, it's also trying to honor you as the actor of like, what can we give him that's fun for him to do and fun for that character to experience?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we went for season two. So I know you don't know that yet, and you're going to get that soon.
I'm waiting with, I'll call the clerk back in New York and tell him I got something really interesting coming. I wonder if he's even working anymore.
I really feel like that needs to be in a script somewhere.
Oh God, that was just amazing. And you know, fortunately I lived in New York, cause I went to law school there and came there right after college. It made absolute sense. Like once he hung up the phone, I was like, that's it. You'll never get that guy on the phone again. That's done. And New York's enough of a place where I wonder if he even commented, or did he just go back to his, you know, donut and coffee? I mean, it's just like, click, that's okay, off my desk. So
he's like, I just saved that man's life. Go be an actor.
Exactly. Click. You have, if you work for the bar, you have to know a lot of dissatisfied lawyers. That is a business where a lot of people, it's hard to get out of because it has so much identity, but it is filled with folks who'd rather be doing something else.
That is such an interesting story. Our last question for this evening. Mm-hmm. Evening. Oh, sorry. It's 11 a.m. where you are.
I know.
It's not even evening for me.
It's,
I don't know why.
Dark somewhere.
I'm dark in my little booth here.
There you are.
So before we wrap this up, is there anything you would like to say to our listeners?
Essentially, tune in and enjoy. Absolutely know that whatever you hear is made up a nanosecond prior to you hearing it. So you're really watching wild animals run around the stage. There's not a lot of, if you ever come to think to yourself, how did they think of it? We didn't think of anything. We didn't think. So that tip I will give.
Great. All right. Well, to wrap this up, we want to say thank you to Christopher T. Wood.
Thank you guys for having me. It was great.
He will, of course, be back in season two as the narrator of Agents Declassified. We wouldn't have anyone else. And Claire and I talked about this in the season one wrap-up, and we talk about it often. When Claire mentioned your name, she said, what about Wood? And I went, what about Wood? It was just kind of one of those things where, like, it just seemed the obvious choice once it was mentioned.
To a certain extent, I feel like, and it's funny because we all met in a play, and I think that's how I was referred to as Wood. And you have to go back to fourth grade where we were all last names, like Leward, Klukasuski, Wood. I'm back in Mrs. Cheshire's class because I'm Wood.
Well, it does help because we've got you and then Chris
That's
Lowe
right.
plays Bradley. And yeah. I know Chris Lowe as Chris because we were roommates for a while. And so I'm like, okay, when we talk about the Chris's, we're just like, okay, Wood.
Wood.
I think we say Wood and Lowe now because it's just easier than just saying
that sounds like a nice law firm name.
Wood and Lowe. That'll be maybe another podcast. Maybe we'll have you star as a lawyer as in a fictional podcast. You've got Lowe. So much.
I don't know if I've ever been a lawyer on Yes, I was on a soap. Something, yeah.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for doing this interview with us.
Thanks for taking the time. It's great. I'm so glad to be coming back. And this really is, it's a great opportunity and so fun to work on.
That's wonderful. And we're happy to have you. And to all of our listeners, stay tuned, everybody. Thank you for listening to Agency Classified. And we will hear you soon. Bye.
Bye.